You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. When the pandemic struck, it was uncharted territory for businesses all over the country. There was no one-size-fits-all solutions for economic recovery. But the Juno Economic Development Council is there to help businesses navigate. Welcome back to the show, Brian Holtz, Executive Director. Hello.
Good afternoon, Shirley. Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here today. You're here to share some updates from JEDC, and I think our audience will be pretty eager to hear them. So let's get started. Let's dive right in with tourism this summer. Nobody can miss the cruise ships in port just about every day now. Kind of a weird sight now, but one that was once very familiar. So how far off are we from a normal tourism season?
Well, in terms of visitors this year, we're looking at less than 200,000, and normally we would have, but about a 1.3 million or so. So we're way down, but we're seeing the impacts of these visitors, positive impacts on our economy. We're seeing jobs come back in the summer, not quite to where we have been pre-pandemic. We're about 1,000 jobs shy of where we would normally be, but we are seeing an uptick in jobs returning. So that is good. What is important for people to understand is that the recovery and the impact on businesses is very uneven. So there are some segments of our tourism economy that are having an okay year because they cater to the independent traveler, which has been coming this summer anyway, coming back fairly strongly. It's it's those businesses that cater more specifically to the large cruise ships, those continue to suffer. You know, many of our tour operators, many of our shops downtown that sell those souvenirs that everyone loves to bring back home, a little piece of Alaska from the trip, those businesses continue to suffer for a second year. And it's really, really hard on those downtown businesses.
For those small and or not so small local businesses being very severely impacted, what can they do to hang on?
Well, I think we can do is to the degree we can buy our presents early for our friends and send them a lot of Juno-ness, we should all do that as much as we can. but all joking aside, you know, there have been some assistance programs that have worked pretty well the last year. I think all of us anticipated that 2021 would be back to normal, and it is not yet back to normal. So, yeah, I think there is, the state has a program, I can talk about that now or a little bit later, that is going to start in October. That's going to try to meet some of the needs of this industry, of the visitor industry in general and downtown businesses. But again, we need to be careful about the types of assistance, more targeted in our assistance, because like I said, the impacts are uneven this summer.
The 1,000 jobs or so that we do not have or did not come back this summer, what kind of jobs were those? What happened to the people that did them?
Yeah, so we are, part of what happens in Juno is that we have people coming from outside for jobs, and a lot of those people did not come back. Where we have seen jobs come back are in the seafood industry. They have had challenges bringing and hiring and getting the processing jobs back, but those have come back. But in tourism, we're losing, we're not seeing, that's where the loss of jobs is in services, in restaurants, and in continue to be down. And then of course, in our positions for retail and anything that supports the tourism industry, those have been down. There are sectors in Juno that are strong, like our construction sector has been, as strong as it's ever been last year, and this year has really been surprisingly strong.
Right. Yeah. Apart from tourism, another factor that you and the JEDC look at is housing construction. So what trends are you seeing there, and how does that affect the economic recovery for Juno?
Yeah. So housing is really a challenge. It's been a challenge in Juno for many, many years, just having enough housing. And we have one of the lowest vacancy rates in the state, and lower than average, meaning we simply don't produce enough housing for the demand we have in our community. And that continues. And we're seeing that across the nation. And part of the phenomena that is occurring is that the population is healthier, we're living longer. And what we anticipated of this downsizing, which I think we hear about, but we really don't see as much as we expect, people don't really downsize. People are living longer in their homes and not giving up their homes. So we're seeing that they're across the nation and in Juneau, our housing stock just isn't large enough. But we're also seeing, to the credit of our business community, our construction community, you know, some of the strongest housing development in years. You know, 2021 is shaping up to be as strong a year in new production of new units of housing as anything we've seen in the last 10 years. But the year's not over yet, but we know that in talking to builders, they are busy and they're producing as much housing as they can. Their housing is expensive, though. The prices continue to go up. And unfortunately, so do apartment rents. We are experiencing the highest rental rates. We have some of the highest rental rates in any urban area in Alaska. And those prices continue to head up. It's supply and demand, and we just don't have enough supply.
And in general, how is the overall recovery in 2021 when you look at all these factors, a not normal tourist year, expensive housing, a little bit of job loss? What are the long-term and short-term impacts, and how is it looking compared to 2020 and 2019?
Well, I think Juneau is, we're fortunate. We're relatively diverse economy. We have state government, federal government, and our local government that have all stayed fairly steady, which is really great for Juneau. Our seafood industry, there's a lot of demand for the products that we have in our region. That has stayed fairly steady. Mining is a really important, very high-paying jobs. That has also done well. In fact, we've seen the commodity prices increase through the pandemic. So those jobs are still there. Our arts and culture sector, they are suffering because there just aren't the opportunities that people to go out and enjoy art. And then, of course, our restaurants and hospitality suffer. But in general, Juneau's economy is okay. You say that, and I say that with a little hesitation because if you're in some sectors like tourism that cater to large crews, you're suffering severely. But in general, most of our economy is holding up pretty well. And I think we're encouraged about what, if we can get through this year and next year is normal, and I feel like we said that a year ago, we'll be okay.
You had given us a good suggestion for helping some of the businesses most severely impacted by the reduced cruise ship passengers coming into town, buying some souvenirs. But there's also an app that everyone can use called Local Frequency, which will also bolster small businesses, local businesses. Would you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, thank you. Local Frequency. So this is directly in response to what is happening with the pandemic, our understanding of our greater appreciation, I should say, of the importance of our small businesses in our community and how many jobs that they hold for us and how many great services they provide. So Local Frequency is an app that you can download on your phone, and it allows you to shop at a local business. And these local businesses, they get an app that provides them a loyalty program that is basically free of charge, that allows them to market directly to local customers. And the brilliance of it is that you as a consumer have one app that you can use in multiple stores. And we've seen the Sawana Cafe join this month, Layers of Alaska, Song's Sushi, Forno Rosso, the Jack, the Juneau Arts Humanity Council. They have all joined this month as well. And we're continually adding new businesses. All the money that you spend on that app that you put on your app can only be spent at local businesses, and it supports our local economy.
And there's a personal benefit as well. When you spend money through the app, you get a little bit of money back.
That's right. There's a reward for you. You earn local dollars. And so every time you spend, and it's up to the business to how much. So give you 1%, 2%, 3%, 5%. Depending on each business and their offers. But yes, they will reward you with funds that you can then use only at participating businesses. So it's a way for businesses to encourage you to come back to them and also go to their brother businesses throughout our community.
Now, how is the app catching on so far?
It is, it's going great. It's, of course, we want this thing to go faster and faster, but we have over 700 citizens here in Juneau that have downloaded the app and that are participating. And that number just keeps going up in the right direction. So if you haven't used the app, just download it. Super easy to use. And then if you know a business that you like and you want them to participate, let us know at JDC, or just go to that business and ask them, hey, are you participating in the local frequency? And then they can reach out to us and then we can get them onto the program.
Okay, well, thank you so much for those updates. We're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about one of the programs that JEDC is involved in, the First Lego League, which is starting in our elementary and middle schools. Remind our listeners, what is FIRST an acronym for?
It's for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. So that's a national program. It's actually an international program, the Juneau Economic Development Council. We run this program throughout the state of Alaska. In every school district that is interested in the program. It's part of our science, technology, engineering, and math skills development. The STEM skills are important skills for problem solving and collaboration. And the research is pretty solid that if you have strong STEM skills, science, technology, engineering, math skills, you will do better in your work life. People that have strong those skills. And it doesn't mean you have to go become an engineer, but by having those skills, you tend to do better in problem solving and being a good employee in those businesses. So the first is an opportunity, Lego League is an opportunity to get kids engaged in these activities through playing and working with and competing with robots. So they build the robots, they form a team. Every elementary school, every middle school in Juneau has teams. You just need to talk to people at your school, your teachers at your school, ask them about where the team is, if you want your kid to get involved. And then these teams meet, they have coaches. We need coaches. We need volunteers in the community to help service coaches. And then they have a series of competitions throughout the year, and that could even lead to national and international competitions.
And what's the connection between the Juneau Economic Development Council and the First Lego League? How do their activities support or advance your organization and its mission and its goals?
So, you know, the economy is about people, and that people that have heard me talk before will hopefully have heard that before, right? That is the sole purpose of economic development, is so that we can all do better for ourselves and thrive in this world. So critical skills that we've identified that are needed in the workplace and that assist people to do well in the economy are these science, technology, engineering, math skills. And there are many ways to support them. We do activity, we do summer camps, we do teacher training activities. But one fun way to engage kids in a way that they don't even know that they're learning necessarily these skills is to have them engage with on these robotics teams. So they're having fun. And we all know that while they're having fun, they're also learning important skills.
Also important, how's the league working to keep the younger and unvaccinated students safe from COVID-19?
That's a fantastic question. Yeah, we take all the precautions. Unless you're in middle school, you might have a chance to get vaccinated. So the teams all participate with masks. Last year, we ran the entire season virtually. This summer, we did summer camps in person with success. And so this year, we're planning to participate in person. We're going to play that. We're going to watch that closely as the year unfolds. But yes, this is an activity where the kids can come together with their masks on to practice and collaborate with their teammates, just like any other sport that you could imagine.
And I understand you could also use some volunteers to help out with the Lego League. Where can people find out more information about how to volunteer?
Yeah, so the best place is to contact Allison here at the Juneau Economic Development Council. If you could just go to our website at jdc.org, you will see links to our First Robotics program, and let us know. And we need volunteers for different roles. We need some that are coaches of these teams, which is a lot of fun. If you have any engineering background and you enjoy robotics and a little bit of programming, that would be fantastic. And then we just need people that will want to volunteer for our events. And we have a big event in December, which is a tournament in Southeast Alaska here. And we need judges for that event. That's a one-day event. And there's another day that we train you up on all you need to know. So as we move forward, all of these successful events, as you know, take a lot of hands to make happen. This Robotics League, we put on 27 tournaments throughout the state of Alaska. We will this year. All of them are run by volunteers.
Brian Holtz, Executive Director of the Juneau Economic Development Council. Thanks so much for being here with me today and answering all of my questions. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we say goodbye?
No, I just want people to know that there are grant opportunities out there for businesses, new ones coming along. Subscribe to our newsletter and just keep your ear out. We'll try to keep the community informed as those opportunities emerge. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Brian. Take care. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. The Southeast Alaska Land Trust not only puts land into trust to protect it, but also takes on a stewardship role. Jordan Tangway is the stewardship coordinator for SEAL, Southeast Alaska Land Trust, and she is here to tell us about some of their current projects. Hi, Jordan.
Hi there. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for being here. Jordan, would you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do at Southeast Alaska Land Trust?
Yeah, I'd love to. So the Southeast Alaska Land Trust is a Juneau-based nonprofit dedicated to land conservation throughout Southeast Alaska. We were created in 1995 with the help of several real strong pillars in the community. And our mission is to collaborate with communities, individuals, organizations throughout Southeast to help ensure that highly valued habitat, recreation, open space, and cultural and historic areas continue to thrive for the well-being of each generation. And I have the privilege of being the stewardship coordinator, which means that I'm responsible for managing SEALT's 41 conservation properties across Southeast Alaska, from the Jensen Olsen Arboretum, which many of you might know, to places in Excursion Inlet and Sitka and Haines, which comprises almost 3,700 acres of land. So once a year, I go on the ground and support land projects and communicate with landowners.
A big job, but sounds like a real interesting one.
For sure.
So today you wanted to talk about the project involving a pond leveler, aka a beaver deceiver. And I love how your organization has chosen to work with the wildlife instead of simply eradicating it. And I'm excited to hear more about it. But first, let's start with a little geography. Can you remind us where Strawberry Creek and the very, very, very wetlands are located?
Yes. So the Strawberry Creek is located out the road in Juneau, around 25, 26 mile. It's right next to Windfall Lake Trailhead or the Herbert River Road, which leads to Boy Scout Beach. And the Very Berry Berry Wetlands, named for its populous bears and berries on the property. It's a beautiful wetland area, and the Strawberry Creek runs right through it.
The Berry Wetlands became a conserved area not too long ago. Would you mind telling us the story there?
It's a really great story, actually. So in 2018, SEAL Trust was approached by two individuals, Christy Allen and David Waters, about this parcel of land out the road. And Christy's father was really just a lover of that area and the land, and she wanted to see it protected in the future. And so we worked with them, and they were able to give us a generous donation, as well as other donations from Marge and Ed Heiser, who were strong pillars and folks in the Juneau community in the past. And we ended up purchasing this 70.5-acre parcel in 2019.
That's great. And on a side note, David Waters is an employee of KTOO Public Media here, and I'm not surprised at all to hear that he would be a part of something like that. That's very in character for him. So let's talk about the pond leveler, a.k.a. the beaver deceiver. What is a beaver deceiver, and what's going on with the one at Strawberry Creek?
So the story behind this, when we purchased the property in 2019, there was some historical sign of beavers, but there was no large beaver dam, and there was just a beautiful creek running through. Shortly after that, we noticed a beaver dam was being created, and our water levels on the property on Strawberry Creek were increasing. And it was, it's been a little bit of a concern for some of the adjacent neighbors who see these water levels rise, especially with our southeast rains and snows. It's easy for a bunch of rain to drop and then for creek levels to rise. So we wanted to take action in a way that would support both the beavers and the neighbors. So a pond leveler, or aka beaver deceiver, is the funny way to put it, but it's essentially a pipe, a big plastic pipe that goes through a beaver dam. So beavers have a lodge where they live, and they feel protected when there's water around their lodge. So they build these big dams to help increase the water, to help make them feel more secure and comfortable. And so this pond leveler allows the pond to still be in place, but can lower the water just enough so that it doesn't affect our homes and people. So it's a pipe that goes through the dam, and we set it at a specific level that allows the water to decrease, but the beavers to remain. There's a big cage. So if you can imagine this 40-foot piece of pipe that you'd find in a ditch right outside your house, and there's a big metal cage on one side that prevents the beavers from going and plugging up the pipe. And the water runs through the cage, down the pipe, through the dam and out the other side, but there's very little damage to the dam. And it also allows for fish to pass through and go up this pipe as well, but it's a way to allow both humans and beavers to interact. So we installed one of these previously, and now we are realizing that the stream is changing. Water levels are fluctuating based on weather events, and the beavers are ecosystem engineers, you can call them. Some native communities actually call them little people because they're just so smart in engineering these dams. And so we are finding that there's not enough water passing through these big pipes to allow the upstream neighbors to feel comfortable when it does rain. So we need to go out there and do a little more maintenance on them. So that's going to require setting them lower in the dam and to allow more water to run through them, especially when we get some heavy fall rains. And then in the springtime, when the snow starts to melt from the mountains, there's a lot of water running down, and we want to be prepared for that.
So I mentioned before, it sounded like you had a pretty fun job. And if anyone wants to get a taste of doing what you do, your organization actually needs some help from the community to finish this project, to winterize it, basically, to reposition the pipe, the beaver deceiver, a little bit lower in the dam. So that's happening this Saturday. Do you want to tell our listeners how they can participate and what they can expect?
For sure. So this weekend, Saturday morning around 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. is the block where we're going to be out at this property. If you are willing to put in a couple hours, what it'll look like is it's a little wet out there. It is a wetland, hence the name. And we will be working in a creek/pond. So if you have your extra tops or a pair of waders lying around and a couple spare hands, we would love your help to help prepare the dam to put those pipes lower in it. And to get that pond leveler working efficiently. We're also going to need people to help build a cage with wire mesh. So we're going to be using different tools, wire cutters, shovels, rakes, loppers. And it's sure to be a fun time for sure. But if you have a couple hours of manpower to give in, you can certainly contact the Southeast Alaska Land Trust office, which is at 586-3100, or you can certainly email me, which is jordan@sealt.org.
Excellent. And there's more information about this event. There's a Facebook event page for it, so folks can go on and just see or read about anything that you just mentioned. And they can share it. If they can't participate, they can at least share the event and spread the word and maybe get a couple of more volunteers who are interested to come on down. That's great. That's some news you can use. Thank you for sharing that information about the conserved area, the very berry wetlands and Strawberry Creek, the Beaver Deceiver, and all the work that you guys have done and are planning to do to just keep that area nice and natural and welcoming to people and beavers. So I really appreciate that, Jordan.
Yeah, thank you so much. And of course, we are growing land trust and we have lots of projects coming up, and we always love the help and different ideas. If anyone is interested, take a peek over at our Facebook page, our Instagram page. We'd love to connect with you in any way.
Well, thanks so much for being here. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we say goodbye today?
I think that is all. Again, go ahead over to our website, social medias, and check us out. And please feel free to shoot me an email or connect.
Great. And if you're curious about what this kind of work does look like in action or thinking about joining the effort this weekend, there's a 2019 video on our website at ktoo.org titled Meet Juno's Beaver Patrol. And it's got not in the area that you guys will be working, Jordan, but in a different area. They've got some footage of some folks working on a beaver deceiver out there, too. So that was pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, and we've worked with them before over at Beaver Patrol, and they're great, and they have a lot of awesome ideas. For sure, go check it out.
Thanks so much for being here with us today, Jordan, and have a great time this weekend.
Thanks.
Up next, why now is not the time to let your guard down when it comes to COVID. Our next guest will talk about the growing number of cases in Juneau and their impact on the community. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. My final guests today are here to answer our questions about COVID-19 in the city and borough of Juneau and in our schools. Welcome Robert Barr, Deputy City Manager. Hi, Robert.
Shelley.
And Bridget Weiss, Superintendent of the Juneau School District. Welcome, Bridget.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Well, we have a lot to talk about here. And Robert, I'll look to you first. We are currently at level 3. What does that mean for Juneau residents and businesses?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that question, Shelley. So at level 3, masking is probably the biggest thing that we are communicating that is required now in any indoor public space. And an indoor public space is really any business or facility, public or private, publicly or privately owned, that is accessible to the public at large. So you can think of that as really anywhere outside of your home. There are some other community mitigation strategies that we have in place at level 3 that involve some size limitations for restaurants and bars and gyms, and some limitations on personal services being by appointment only, as an example. But really the big one that we hope everyone hears loud and clear is to mask up when you're in an indoor public space. We know that masks are very, very effective at controlling the spread of COVID-19.
Last Friday, the City and Borough of Juneau presented the information about what it means when we go to level 3, what sort of rules go into place there in a virtual press conference. What were some of the biggest questions that came up at that press conference?
You know, there were a variety of questions there. I think the ones that people always ask about is, what are we seeing from a perspective of vaccine breakthrough? What does it look like, or what are we hearing from the perspective of when people are going to be eligible for vaccine boosters, or whether we're going to do vaccine boosters, or the news that the CDC put out a little bit ago now about third doses for people who are immunocompromised. And, the main message on vaccine breakthrough is that, yes, it is possible, and we do see people who are fully vaccinated contract COVID-19, but we know still that the vaccines are really still highly effective at even preventing the transmission of COVID-19. So when we see cases of COVID in fully vaccinated individuals, normally that's in households where close contact is sustained for long, long periods of time and where people are unmasked. We don't see a whole lot of transmission between and to fully vaccinated people when they're just out and about in the community. So, you know, our message there is that please, if you're not vaccinated yet, really think seriously about it. It does work to prevent transmission, and it works even better to prevent hospitalization and death.
And Robert, on Monday, you were quoted as saying to KTOO's Jeremy Shea that, quote, it's our highest caseload to date, about double the caseload that we were experiencing in November of last year. In that article, it mentioned that public health was having trouble keeping track of keeping up with the contact tracing. And of course, November was the peak of the last wave. So have there been any developments since that story came out just a couple days ago?
Unfortunately, we're still reporting high case counts. I did anecdotally hear public health today say that, you know, maybe we can be hopeful based on what they're seeing coming into them just over the past 24 hours that we may be seeing the peak of our current peak. But that's still speculation at this point. Based on the numbers that we're reporting, we are still rising.
We have big cruise ships at the dock every day now, but this doesn't actually appear to be the main source of our COVID infections from what I'm hearing and reading. They're local. Well, what seems to be helping there with the cruise ship passengers?
Well, the biggest factor in the cruise ships is that they are highly vaccinated populations. So many of the cruise ships that you see come into town are 100% vaccinated, fully vaccinated. And those that aren't 100% they're all above 90%. Additionally, none of the cruise ships are sailing at full capacity right now, which means they have spare berths to house people who do test positive and people who are close contacts of individuals that test positive. None of those people venture into the communities, and none of the cruise ships so far that have been here have had any challenge in dealing with the number of positives or close contacts aboard their ships. So, you know, they test often. Especially anyone who is symptomatic and they have that vaccine requirement. So, you know, from our perspective, those are the tools, in addition to masking, that is really enabling them to continue to operate their business right now.
That's just interesting to me because you think of that population being so contained, and there'd often be, you know, outbreaks of other types of viruses on cruise ships in the past. But now that containment is actually working to their advantage. So that's a change.
It's really a testament to how effective the vaccine is. It's just highly, highly effective right now. We are super fortunate to have this vaccine. You know, back when the vaccine was being developed, what we were hearing from vaccinologists and virologists and the experts that we consult with at public health was that, you know, we'd be super lucky if we had a vaccine that was seen as 50 or 60% effective at preventing transmission. They knocked it out of the park, right? We have a vaccine that is so much better than that.
Thank you, Robert. Turning to you now, Bridget. Bridget Weiss, superintendent of the Juneau School District. Kids are back in school. In-person learning has resumed. It's been about a week and a half. What kind of start are we off to so far?
Well, we're just off to a fantastic start. You know, it's been 2 years since we had a more traditional first day of school, and the energy in the community at our schools was really palpable on August 20th when we started. Everybody's just so excited to have kids in school. Parents were excited to have some of our kids their first day of school. You know, we had kind of two groups of that, both our kinders and our first graders. So it was, and many transitions going to middle school for the first time or high school for the first time or senior years. So there was just a lot of really good energy, and people are just excited about the in-person learning that we're doing.
And how are kids and parents supporting or handling the COVID safety restrictions and the masking policies?
You know, one of the most critical things that we're doing is our mitigation. We could not be functioning without them. And so we've had tremendous support. Our families, our kids, they're really stepping up to the plate and supporting these mitigation strategies that we have. And they're just critical. As Robert mentioned, you know, our access to vaccine is really important to our operations. And we, of course, serve a population of students under 12 that cannot yet be vaccinated. So for us, when we are bringing children together for learning and they don't have the option of vaccine, the other mitigation strategies just become all that more important. And so we've had great compliance with masking. Parents are cooperating and calling their students in ill if they're not feeling well so that we can maintain that symptom-free environment, which is, again, just super important to us, as well as all the other layers we have in school. We have, you know, hand washing, hand hygiene, air purifiers going. We have shields up when kids eat lunch and all a variety of different things in different settings to come together to create that mitigation. We've had great cooperation.
Oh, that's great to hear. Although I have been hearing that the spaces indoors, the schools, maybe outdoors as well, can't always accommodate the 3-foot to 6-foot distancing per the school district protocol. Is the district considering any other options to cut down on crowding when it's a problem?
Well, it is, you know, we are an environment that it makes it hard to distance 100% all the time. And part of that is space, but part of it is just simply we are serving children and children move and they have to move to be able to really learn effectively. So we rely on a combination. Everybody has heard about mitigation layers. You know, it's like when you want a gourmet burger, you want lots of different things on there. And so it is all those mitigations that come together. And distancing is one of the mitigation factors that's definitely the hardest for us to maintain consistently. But that's why we have masking. That's why we have a nice percentage of our students, we believe 12 and up, that are vaccinated. We have the air purifiers. We have everyone, kids and adults, masked. So distancing is one of many layers, and it does get harder the younger the students, right? Because we know that there's more movement at our primary grades, as an example. So how that plays out is when we do have a positive case that shows up, then there's more likelihood that we would quarantine a classroom rather than a few kids, the younger the kids, just by the nature of what we are doing the best we can in terms of learning, teaching and learning in our schools.
Got it. And when a student does test positive for COVID, because despite the all the measures in place, there have been some positives, their close contacts are notified and they all need to stay home. But how do you determine who is a close contact and who isn't when you've got, you know, all these kids moving throughout a room throughout the day?
Sure. One of those things is we need parents notifying us right away, which they are. So that's super helpful. So as soon as we're notified that we have had a case that was present in the building during the time that exposure could happen, then we start the process. And one of the strategies we're using right now, because we simply are limited on time to respond on occasion, is quarantining the classroom for a day while we do that contact tracing. And we ask all kinds of questions of the teacher about how the class is configured, what kind of contact there is, where, how they eat lunch, if they went to a special, which would be like music or PE or library. And we get all that information and then we make a determination. And again, the younger classes we're finding, it's harder to only quarantine some. The older ones were able to narrow it down a little bit based on the definition of close contact. So that's what we're doing. And then we notify everybody right away. The cases that we've had so far, of course, just coming into the school year, what we're finding is, of course, these are cases that have happened in other environments outside of school. And so we are following all of our guidelines, of course, to quarantine where we need to and to keep learning going. But these cases that we're seeing are cases, many siblings or family, as Mr. Barr mentioned, Once it's inside of a family, we are seeing that transmission. So we're watching siblings closely and so forth. So that's our response. We make those decisions and then we communicate them. It is disruptive, but now, especially for our 12 and under, it's what we have to do to maintain our in-person learning. We're going to know a lot more in 2 to 4 weeks as to how well this mitigation works against this variant, in particular for children under 12. Right now, it's working from everything we can see. We are definitely the most mitigated environment that students are in. They are less mitigated when they're at home, when they're outside, when they are at many youth activities in town. So what we know about our environment at schools is that we really are one of the best, most mitigated environments that our children are in. We think that's going to pay off, especially if we continue to have our community, if they have been hesitant about the vaccine, if they make that decision and we continue on that trail as a community, then it's all going to come together. And it's really important for our kids that it does. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
I can tell that you're very serious about it and taking everything extremely seriously. Can you envision a scenario where the school district would return to virtual learning?
We are definitely poised depending on the need. So right now, what we think is we know so much more about the virus than we did 1 year ago today, like so much more. We know how it transmits. We know what mitigations mean when they all come together and layer up. And of course, we have vaccine, which we did not have a year ago. So our staff is highly vaccinated. Many of our families are highly vaccinated. Many of our kids now are highly vaccinated. So we're in a very, very different place. So we think we have many other strategies before shifting completely to in-person learning that we just didn't have it in our toolbox a year ago. So that would mean perhaps like we are now, quarantining classrooms and stopping in-person learning in classrooms for 5 to 10 days, depending on all the timing. It could be potentially that we need to close a school for 5 to 10 days or something like that. If we thought that there was some sort of transmission happening inside the school, or if we had staff impacted some way and we didn't have enough staff, adults, to run a school. But those are all intermediate steps we would do before we made major broad stroke changes to our operational status.
Bridget Weiss, superintendent for the Juneau School District, thank you so much for answering my questions. I know it's been very tough. And Robert Barr is with us as well. Thank you so much. We are out of time for today, but juneau.org/COVID-19 is where you can find more information about anything we've talked about today. Robert and Bridget, thank you both for your time.
Thank you so much, Shelley.
Thank you for having us.
Take care.